Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living in the Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today we have a friend of the show, somebody I love having on. We're going to speak with Miss Lynn Taylor, the Common Core Diva. And we're going to pick up a bit from where our last show was. And we spoke about things, as we usually do, things about our school system that parents may not be aware of. And I think one of the things that we have to always keep in our back pocket as a position of power is knowledge. If you don't know, then you cannot make conscious decisions that benefit you and your family. So, Lynn, I want to thank you so much for joining me today. I know this is a busy time of year for you and at the holidays, but we had a conversation about education and educating people, and it's never a bad time to arm parents and children with knowledge. So I wanted to go back and talk about how the schools are becoming parents and how the reach of the government and the reach of the system is literally becoming a middleman, it sounds like, or seems to be, between the parent and the child. And from a medical perspective, I'm always fascinated to figure out why there is such a growth in prescriptions that are written out for children, whether that's ADHD or anxiety, depression. I know since COVID, we've had a lot of changes and a lot of things that are not normal, with children being homeschooled and not being able to see their friends and interact socially. But this seems like a bigger picture, isn't it?
Oh, it absolutely is, Dr. Elena. And thank you so much for having me back on. And I hope everyone has started off their holiday season, no matter what it is, with joyous times together. And, let's remember why we do what we do, not just go through the motions.
I think that's really important. And I ran across an article that really started me down the path of wanting you to come back and speak about this. And it was an article from a whistleblower in Ohio, who talked about how the schools were hiring a whole infrastructure of psychiatrists and therapists and social workers with the mindset that they could be used to cajole parents into feeling safe, to have them make the decision about whether their child should go on a medication. I thought that was kind of insidious, actually. And I wondered, is that what you think is going on nationwide, or is this an outlier?
Oh, this is part of the supposed solution to the made-up problem that COVID gave us so much of a tremendous train wreck when it comes to education. But actually, Dr. Elena, if you go back in research and you look, you will find that the bastardization of the family, especially through a federal viewpoint, has been always about grabbing the attitudes, values, and beliefs of every student who came through into believing that somehow the system always knew better, and that if they were going to come alongside parents, they would only give them part of the picture, not the entire picture, and then go ahead and assume that the school knew way more about Johnny and Susie than Johnny and Susie's own parents would actually know about them. And so with that, in our last show, let's pick up just a little bit where we left off, because we were talking about how the U.S. Department of Education was going to walk alongside state and local organizations to boost up what they were saying was mental health disparities because of COVID and the learning loss, if you will. And what we found in that particular show was that it wasn't stopping at the public school door. It was going out into the community, because you cannot assimilate an entire society if you only assimilate certain portions of the society. And school has always been part of the education movement for being a change agent to change us from free thinkers into mindless conformers. And, you know, this whistleblower was talking about a special needs student and how the IEP, the independent education program, was being involved, and that the school was trying to really coerce the family into taking the drugs for the student when the student was like, no, I really, really don't. But let's stop and think about it from another viewpoint. We have kids who are being told that they can consent to all kinds of hormone blockers or top-down, bottom-down surgeries or you know, this sort of thing. And so what is to say they can't consent to these other things as well? This is totally eroding the parent's responsibility given to them by God to nurture and raise that child and let the child continue to believe what the education system is telling them, in that they don't need their parents to decide anything for them.
This is very interesting. I mean, you talk about rearing children and having the parent be the, which used to be, the sole determiner of what constitutes what they want to do for their child, to take care of them until they're age 18. And you're describing a system that completely throws that overboard and allows administrators and therapists and medical professionals to come in without knowing anything really about the family or the child, just decide they're looking for what you've said before about an outcome, it seems. It's not about the individual. It's about what you're trying to achieve as the outcome.
Absolutely. And what we need to understand is that it's not just the Department of Education, but you've got any partner, be it a government agency, a non-government agency, or a public-private partnership, which we know is fascist. But one of the main culprits in this movement to go in and usurp the family can be found in the AmeriCorps part of the United States government. They have what's called a HIPPE program, and it says here from one of the documents that I have from the AmeriCorps, is that HIPPE has a mission to help parents prepare their children for success in schools and beyond. Well, that doesn't sound so bad until you get to looking at what the program does, and it goes into the literal home of the family to groom and guide the family to bow to the government's outcome formula for that particular family. It doesn't really look at an individual family and say, well, Dr. Elena's family might need A, B, C, and D, or Lynn's family might need E, F, and G. It's going to look at both our families and go, well, no, you're both getting the same thing, because we want all the children, we want all the families to come out the same way. Now, if you trace this particular home visit program, because that's what it's talking about, is home visits. That's what the HIPPE stands for. You have to go back to Israel back in the 1960s. This was a research project of the Hebrew University that was funded by the Henry Ford Foundation. And if we know anything about the educratic BS that has gone on because of Common Core, we can find the Ford Foundation at its crux. So for over the past 50 years, this particular program concept about coming in with supposedly developmentally appropriate cognitive, social, emotional, and physical development tools, it goes on to tell you that it's also pre-canned to fit the government need, the curriculum need, not the necessarily family dynamic. But it goes on to tell you that this particular program that started in the 60s to infiltrate in our homes has spread to 15 countries. And if you look at a timetable of how it landed in America, you can find that in 1969, it was started in Tel Aviv. By the 1980s, Hillary Clinton had been successful in implementing it in Arkansas. But it was a Dr. Miriam Westheimer, who was the HIPPE International Director, who used it worldwide, and she brought it personally to the United States and then was in connection with Hillary Clinton. So when you hear the old phrase about the village raising the child, this is that concept on hyperspeed.
I mean, all these euphemisms sound so innocuous, doesn't it? Village raising a child, meaning we take your child and we mold them and you get out of, you know, get in the program with the program or get out of the way. I mean, this is, first of all, it seems so underhanded, honestly. Everything's happening in a school setting. The parent is just getting bread on the table, keeping the child in a home, and really focused on survival, especially with the economy that we find ourselves in, while the child is in a whole nother setting where, I mean, you described some of the medications that go on, the blockers, the birth control pills. I mean, they want to have whole medical services in these schools. Am I wrong? I think that's what you mentioned in the past.
No, that's part of what that push for the full community school system is. But I just wanted to point out, as you're talking about this, that HIPPI stands for Home Instruction for Parents of Preschool Youngsters and Their Intervention. Now, why in the world would you need to intervene with a preschool student? You don't, unless you have an agenda. And here are some of the findings that are based off of this supposed case study research. That you have multiple levels of implementation that will support aid in scaling the family. That the grantee and the local agencies appear to benefit from being flexible on part of the intervention developer. Then you have also that scaling HIPPI with AmeriCorps members, the grantee and the local agencies have been able to meet the USAID's personal requirements of the HIPPI International. And it goes on to tell you that this is all scaling evidence-based models on children. Well, what is evidence-based? It means that someone has taken junk science, thrown together a case study, said that it's going to work, and then everybody buys it into it lock, stock, and barrel.
Without any real knowledge of whether it works. Well, I think they know it works, otherwise they wouldn't be pushing it, right? So it's working to literally handicap the individual nature of the parent, the child, so you can pursue what you're put on this earth for. But this reminds me, it goes back, doesn't it, to what the government is educating people for. It's for what the society needs as per the government, right? So you may not need a poet or, you know, a singer, but you need someone who's going to get in a factory and be able to push a button, right?
Right, right. Well, if you go back to our previous show on this, let's review this for just a minute. This was a press release put out by the Department of Education back on the 28th of November. The U.S. Department of Education announced nearly $74 million in new five-year full-service community schools and their grants that will support additional 30 local education agencies, nonprofits, and other public or private organizations, as well as institutions of higher education working to expand community schools. So what it's telling you is that it's going to deepen community partnerships between schools and families and somehow be the savior that we all need or didn't think we need, but they've come in and told us we need to connect children and families to all these vital resources that will meet holistic needs.
But it's so vague when you think about it. What happened to reading, writing, and arithmetic? There doesn't seem to be any focus on that. It's all social outcomes.
Right. It absolutely is, because you have to attack the minds of your citizens if you want to control them. And we need to think about this. This holistic need sounds great, fine, and wonderful until you understand that the government's coming in with comprehensive, which means anything that is attached to anything about your attitudes, values, beliefs, your IEPs or your special needs or those who are considered normal or whatever, it's going to come in and it's going to be this like whole child approach. Well, that's, you can't educate just part of the child. You have to educate all of the child. That's always been my argument with that particular word. Mm-hmm. But comprehensive means they're going to come and throw everything, including the kitchen sink, at you to get you to conform. It also tells you we're going to use wraparound approaches, including nutrition assistance, mental health services, early childhood education, after school summer learning, enrichment programs, all which are geared and crucial for accelerating academic success. No, it doesn't. It has nothing to do with academic success and everything to do with control and dictatorship.
Well, let's take our first break because I think people need to get their minds wrapped around that because it's all encompassing. And when mm-hmm. you send your child to school, you don't know what's coming back at the end of the school day. So let's take our first break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Miss Lynn Taylor, the Common Core Diva. And you can go to her Facebook page. It's Common Core Diva. And Twitter, follow Lynn Taylor. It's Lynn Taylor, is it Common Core Diva on Twitter?
It's at Common Core Diva, Twitter, X, whatever they're calling it now.
Yeah, I still say Twitter.
Yeah.
Well, before the break, I think you did a wonderful job of giving us a foundation on this plot to literally remake our society, because I don't have any facility, I'm sure you don't either, with being educated in this manner. It's so counter to what we focused on growing up. It was critical thinking. You had to be able to have a foundation, a fund of knowledge, use that mm-hmm. fund of knowledge to expand and critically think. So you constantly were growing and pushing boundaries and arguing, you know, I mean, that's how we learned. We had to have a point, counterpoint. If we wrote an essay for history,
right,
we had to actually prove it, not just say because diversity or whatever they're saying. I don't know what they're saying, but
it's inclusion and diversity and equity, I believe, is the term. But it's not teaching you count point account. It's saying, no, let's use bully social justice tactics to get you to change your thinking to meet my thinking, because after all, my thinking is better and more correct than your thinking.
And you think about that equity and inclusion and no bullying aspect of what they keep pronouncing, but it actually is bullying, because if you fall outside the chosen group, by definition, you're a bad person and you have to, you know, apologize
right.
and atone. I mean,
right.
how can somebody walk into a classroom, an innocent person, child with no frame of reference, and be told they're the worst person in the world just by what they look like, or someone's better than you because of what they look like? That doesn't even make sense. I don't understand, honestly, how parents put their children in the system. Now, I'm a big proponent of withdraw your consent. If it doesn't fit what you believe morally, ethically, then you don't need not to be in the system. I know we've had a conversation about the private schools are just as inoculated with this as the public. But honestly, would there be a stop to this if parents en masse kept their kids home? I don't care if they're private, public, whatever. Make a statement that I will not put my child in a system that damages them. And it damages everybody.
It absolutely does. And that would be great if we were in a perfect world. But here's what we're finding that is happening with these community schools, with these grants, with these wraparound comprehensive services. It is, and especially using COVID as the example, that gave the Department of Education and your local and state government the wherewithal to seek your family out, regardless if you were a member of the public school or so-and-so's private school. Let's say you were a homeschool family. This gave them the wherewithal to be able to do it. It also gave them the power through funding. I mean, I'm looking here at a plan that the state of North Carolina is putting into place that will do just that, because after all, they can't help you become a better North Carolinian if you don't have access to all the government services and all the government conformities that come with it. I'm looking here at another proposal from Kansas on early childhood education. Just listen to this. Learning is a lifelong activity, and every environment is a learning environment. A child's success in school and life is everyone's responsibility. Communities, educational environments, families, and children should be ready to support success. School readiness involves the whole child in the context of the family and the community. This includes the child's health and development in the following areas: physical, social, emotional, cognitive, general knowledge, communication, and literacy. Integrated services must be available to children appropriate to their age, abilities, language, and culture. That's going to be pretty hard to pull off. This is why we're seeing so much cookie cutter items go on with these streamlined services. And the image that you see, if you've ever looked at the pyramid on a dollar bill and you see that there's that eye on top, I want you to stop and think that triangle. And then in circles around it, curriculum, instruction, assessment, or testing, empowering your culture, professional development, and leadership. And it's not just for a few. It's not just for some. It is for all, meaning all children, regardless of school location.
How can they actually say this? Since this has been implemented and it has been slowly unfolding, the one thing I see overall across the country is the standard of the education success rate. People who can do math by the time they're out of high school, their reading level, things that are really concrete that you should be able to measure that your child is advancing, it's dropped across the board for everybody. How are you, who is there? Is there a voice saying, hey, look at the metrics, this isn't working? I mean, I know we're in a position in a society where the media is the bullhorn. So it seems like it's just the only voice in town, but I can't imagine that parents and teachers who really want to teach their children and educate them are thrilled with this outcome. It's not success. Success at what? Not anything you can measure.
Well, here's where media has played into the agenda. First of all, the guys is, we're going to take this problem and we're going to magnify it. And then we're going to show you that supposedly the only solution will be either the Republicans throwing more money at it or the Democrats throwing more money at it. No one's really addressing the problem, but they're sitting here telling you, well, we're going to put a us versus them or that political party against that political party. And then we're not only going to sit here and tell you that each of them can solve the problems, but they'll go as far to say as well, because of each other, we have these problems. No, here's the real truth of it. Because they have colluded together in education, in healthcare, two constitutional areas that no political party from a federal level was ever supposed to have jurisdiction over. The states have, and local municipalities have sold that right, constitutionally protected right to stand up for the people and go, no, we're going to take the federal dollar. So they might as well have just been over and handed you a jar of Vaseline and said, please and thank you.
Wow. You know, that's exactly, just hit the nail on the head on that, because there's such a congruence in the way they did it in healthcare as well. It's always like Affordable Care Act just sticks out in my mind with that. Right. It was give the states money to implement the Affordable Care Act, get them on the teat of the government. And then when... Yep. Because it had a time limit to it. Nobody even thinks about it. It remembers that. But they're going to give money for X number of years and they're going to withdraw it to get everybody kind of used to this thing. And then here in Georgia, what happened is they got rid of, but they changed the criteria for Medicaid because they were no longer getting money from the government. Next thing you know, there's hundreds, if not thousands of people thrown off of Medicaid with no health care. And then here we go again with another round of, you can get into the Affordable Care Act. It's like you create the problem and then you're the solution. And they didn't get enough people, I would guess, the first time. So they're just going to keep doing this over and over again until people are.
And that's what North Carolina's doing, is they expanded Medicaid. And with it, well, here come all these other supposed saving things that our people need. And let's stop and remember, I'm not discounting the fact that there are people who need mental health. I'm not discounting the people who need help with their special needs child. I'm not saying we don't have that, but it was never the government's right, responsibility, or even privilege to take those things over. If you go back as far as the scripture, widows, orphans, those in need, that was the church's responsibility. But let's talk about how the church has bent over as well and said please and thank you, because they have colluded with the government through non-government organizations, public-private partnerships, to get in on this system as well. And they're in full support of it. We need to help those who need the help, but we don't need, and this is the damning part of this entire setup. It assumes that everyone, whether they're man, woman, old, young, whatever, is in need of some sort of government interaction or intervention. And thus, that gives them the carte blanche to say, oh, yes, Elena, you need A, B, C, and D, so you come on down. Or Lynn, you need this, and you come on down. And oh, while we're at it, why don't we just bring in your whole family, and we'll just see how everybody's doing.
Well, it's a slippery slope. But the slope all ends with one power controlling everything, whether that's your healthcare, your education system, your banking, your home now. They're all kind of connected with this one drain that everything's sucking into. But when you lose that ability to control your own destiny, to decide what you want to be when you grow up as a child, or what your parents want to help you focus on, you just lost your will. I think what makes us as humans so amazing is that we're all different. And I can't stand the word equity, because we're different. No one's better than anybody else. Everybody has a talent. Everybody's put on this earth to achieve. But for someone to get to decide who wins and who loses, who ends up in what pot, who's useful and who's not, it's based on something completely arbitrary. And the more you talk, and the more we're talking about this, I'm beginning to think the people who are useful are the ones who are going to go along and get along and not raise a ruckus or fight the system.
That you won't fight. They're going to sit here and depend on the millions of people that they have been able to infiltrate their minds thus far through the indoctrination systems that we have called education systems for the at least past 40, 50 years, who've not, woken up, so to speak. They're depending on those people to continue this rhetoric that, oh, we're so helpless, we can't do anything without the government. Mm-hmm. They're depending on that. And let's stop and think, COVID was a big example of who was deemed essential and who wasn't. We're all essential. My essential may not be what your essential is, but for my health, well-being, and existence on the face of this planet, it's essential that I have some of the things that you may not need. And this was one of the things that absolutely drove me up the wall about, oh, well, this person has an essential job and this person, well, not so much. But, when you stop and think about it, it makes sense that they introduced that concept to our society, because they could further use the word equity and get away with misrepresenting what equity really is. And we've done shows where I have gone to the dictionary and read to you what equity is and what equality is. Equality deals with people getting equal treatment. Equity is always a financial term for business. And the reason why we see equity replacing equality, especially when it comes in education, is because people don't know any better and they accept it.
Well, they also get, this is a media-driven society, right? So there's some sort of perceived power or leg up by being part of a group that's somehow marginalized and put on some sort of pedestal. And I have to say, it's not a pedestal. It's actually the worst thing in the world. When someone tries to highlight your group, you better look out, because ultimately it's not in your favor. And for everybody, it's not in anybody's favor. It just helps us fight each other. You just described prior how this left-right paradigm, this D and R system, it's two sides of the same coin, but they thrive on getting people to join their team. It's horrible. It's like a sports analogy. You don't care as long as your team wins, even if you don't end up in a good place. But as long as you win, it's all good, without looking at any consequences or who stands to gain. How can people be this short-sighted? It's pretty amazing that you work against your own interests.
I think it has to do with being so enamored with money are somehow still believing that the government still cares about me. Now, when you were talking about, you know, don't point out your marginalized group, or, you know, don't call attention to the group that you're in because it's not going to have a nice outcome, or excuse me, a nice result. I'm not going to use that word outcome. I absolutely hate it. But back in 2013, here in North Carolina, somebody got the desire or the political power to go, we want to change the homeschool law. Those of us who had been under the absolute 100% freedom without any government intrusion into our homes were going, why? The justification was, well, you're somehow missing out on proms. You're missing out on sports teams. You're missing out on college applications. And we're sitting there telling the powers that be, we have our own sports. We have our own proms. We have our own ways of getting into college or deciding not to go to college. We're fine. We don't need any redefinition. But because the political power was playing with everything to dance to the governor's tune that went right along with the Race to the Top funding about that time, it got changed. And because of the change, more government oversight into homeschooling, which had not been in this state for 25 to 30 years, suddenly was in place. Because after all, we'd been put under a microscope. And because we'd been put under a microscope, all that freedom that we had just got curtailed.
I mean, again, I mean, you can speak for your state, but was there any group that stood up and tried to, you know, make a signal or warning that this was going to be an issue that would take away, especially the parents who are homeschooling their kids? Did they get involved? Did they try to
make an outcry? Well, here's the fun thing. There was a group of us. There was a very small group of us, and we traveled the state trying to warn parents. It was the supposed advocacy group to protect homeschoolers in this state that got on board with the government and said, oh yes, we need to change the law because after all, we're just not being served very well.
Oh wow.
Well, we ended up in the General Assembly. They had all kinds of people testify as to why this law needed to be updated, so to speak. We had even fewer on the opposition. My youngest and I were the loudest and the most vocal of the opposition. We were so effective in our points, counterpoints, if you will, that we had no less than three legislators come up to us afterwards and say, you know, you're absolutely right. It's a shame that this is going to happen. And you know why it happened? Because our state was up for $400 million in federal funding. And the purpose was to blur the lines between what was considered homeschooling as it was and public education. This is why since then I have warned folks, homeschool, but know exactly what your state expects because at some point it can change. And because of what I've seen through the federal government, especially with these overreaches into special needs and home visits and family interactions, the writing is on the wall.
Now, this is kind of interesting because started off the show, we talked about how they're having all of these psychotherapists and social workers come in. Do you think that having all of that infrastructure, first of all, when you're a hammer, everything's a nail, right? So if you have all this infrastructure looking for mental challenges in the school system, you're going to find them. You're going to create them. It's going to become magnified. Do you think that's going to supercharge? Oh, now you need more help from the government. You don't have enough support. And next thing you know, it gets really pushed through on that level.
Right, it does. And here's a reason why we're seeing such an uptick in special needs IEPs and advocating for drugs, or why we're seeing multi-tiered support system and all the garbly-goo staff that you just mentioned interjected into our schools. It's because our federal government has said that, you know, we need to increase this because after all, the diagnostic statistic guide, the DSM-5, has now included things like being stubborn as to some sort of behavior intervention that has a new technical name. It's no longer in fashion to say, I have a stubborn child. No, I have a defiant disorder child. We're reinventing the wheel to create more havoc, and it's being accepted because some idiot got out there with an agenda and some money and helped walk along the side of this group to go, oh yeah, we need to update the DSMI, which is used by psychologists to diagnose what should have been just the bona fide mental disorders. But if you look at the guide, it has absolutely opened up Pandora's box. And if it looks like a duck, it's going to get labeled that it's a duck in need, and it's going to need interventions. It's going to need counseling. It's going to need therapy. It's going to need constant surveillance. It's going to need isotropic drugs.
It's a self-fulfilling wheel. It just keeps feeding itself. But at the end, nobody's looking at the parent and the parental-child relationship. And I can foresee some parents deciding that, no, I'm not doing it. I'm not putting my child on this. And then they become a disruptive parent, or whatever the term they're going to use for them. And then that system gets to come out with home visits and everything else that can potentially ruin a parent's life. Am I correct?
Oh, absolutely. And it's going on every single day in this nation through Child Protective Services, because some idiot thinks that something is going on in the family that is not going on in the family. Now, I know there are certain cases when, yes, there has been abuse. Yes, there has been all kinds of skullduggery that CPS needs to intervene. But what we're seeing is because of these funding streams, Dr. Elena, that Department of Health and Human Services at state levels, with their DDS departments and their CPS departments for Child Protective Services, are taking draconian measures to lump in every family as somehow abusive or neglectful so that they can come in. And I can put you in touch with a family who was minding their own business at home, doing what they could to homeschool, and at gunpoint, their home was broken into and their children physically and forcibly removed as the parents were held in handcuffs and watched them taken away. And why? Because someone had said something they couldn't prove, but yet the government came in, well, because we have this funding, because we have this authority, we can go in and we can do this.
Wow. Let's take our last break, because I think people need to take a break, step back, and think about that, because that power can totally be used for negative and for control. So let's take our last break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living Solution. We're speaking with Miss Lynn Taylor. And Lynn, I know that you've moved away from some of the shows that you're doing, but what's currently... how can people currently find you and listen to what you speak about and write about?
Well, the best place would be, Dr. Elena, would be the blog. The webmaster who I have has been gracious, and she uploads all my podcast links. She uploads my latest articles, that sort of thing. Facebook has pretty much rendered my Facebook page useless. You can see the Facebook page, but I have no ability anymore to post any new content. Twitter would be probably the best way to catch up with me. Also, probably in 2024, the best way that you're going to be able to get in touch with me is to send me an email, info@commoncorediva.com, and let's schedule a talk. I don't care if it's you need a keynote, you need a panelist. I don't care if it's you need a special workshop. I am making myself absolutely available to anyone across this nation or anywhere within the sound of my voice, even if it's in another country, because we don't have time to keep doing more podcasts. What we need to do is join together, unite these families who are wanting to fight against this, give them the courage and the power that we have been given, and then unite together.
I think that's wonderfully said. We're in a position now, everybody has to take a stand and not just sit back and wait for somebody else to do it. Everybody's got to put their body on the line, their voice on the line, and their choices really on the line. This is moving, as you just described, you know, previously, this is moving very quickly. And we're talking about a generational change, are we not? If these children get out to graduate into college, they don't know anything except what they've been indoctrinated to believe. And once you've got that and you don't have critical thinking skills, I don't think you're even reachable. Because one thing that we do know, if you have knowledge and you go out there and redo your own research and read, something generally doesn't fit and you'll figure it out and you'll start going down a different path. And at least you'll know that there's a way, that this is another way, right? If you don't know of any other way and you don't have the capability or the tools to do that, it's like handicapping somebody.
Well, and that's what our system has done. I mean, I've got a friend in England who wrote a book called No Place for Children. I would add to that and say that our communities are becoming no place for children. Think about back in Chitty Chitty Bang Bang when the child catcher had dressed up his little prison cage that was portable. He lured the children in, and then once he got them in, he dropped all the facade, and they were imprisoned. That's what our communities are doing in the name of supposed community spirit or government support. We cannot trust anyone from the government. We need to look at the funding streams of what programs we are accessing in our communities. We need to do more than look beyond, just look at the surface. We've got to dig deep because, you know, sometimes they hide things, not just two layers deep, but sometimes almost 20 layers deep. I mean, come on, let's think about it. If you look at the way that our technology is spying on us, that's just part of what had been planned years ago. It's what's helped speed up some of this dumbing down. It's why we don't have true critical thinking anymore, because if children were to really critically think in an age-appropriate manner, they would see that this activity is wrong. But why we're seeing so many go along with it is because they've not been given the full access to all the array of all the wonderful things they could do with their minds and their spirits and their bodies. It's like you said, they're purposely being handicapped. We've got millions of parents out there who are purposely handicapped to be able to conform to this system, to say, it's okay, Johnny and Susie can go on to the school.
Well, this is so insidious too, because if you're, you know, they've hyphenated and marginalized so many different people that the parent has the ability, or I should say, it's easier for them to say, my child isn't doing, not because you're not teaching them or because you're not expecting more from them, but because of what they look like and who they are, therefore it's your fault and you need to make an accommodation. That's not helping your child, but it's giving you an excuse to let the system persist, and you're empowering it. But ultimately, when it comes down to getting out into the real world, being able to be a functioning member of society without training wheels, I'm a little bit afraid of what we're going to be seeing. I don't think people can do that.
Well, I don't think they can and go very far, but here's what frightens me more is that it is using schools as a widget to divide parents from their children. And see, to me, that is far worse than any of this other stuff that's going on, because what you're seeing happen is, well, Johnny or Susie goes to school and says, well, I feel like a Fig Newton today. Well, okay, therefore you are a Fig Newton. Well, mom and dad don't think I need to be a Fig Newton. Well, what do mom and dad know? They don't know anything. Hang over here with us. We'll have to be the biggest, maddest Fig Newton you possibly can be. And then when mom and dad come in, it's like, you have no access to this child because you don't think they're a Fig Newton.
As I've read about things of this nature more frequently. It's just coming, it's becoming mainstream. You think about this as being an outlier. It's not really.
No, it's not.
It's all about follow the money. Is there any school system that you can think of that has rejected this?
No, not one. Because we have become a society that is so comfortable in its own flossness. That it is, this is what we were told in scripture, you know, you go along with it long enough, I'm just going to let you go and be lost in it. I'm not saying that we can't be saved. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that a large part of why we're in this mess is because we've allowed it. And we have to get to a point, and I don't know what point that's going to be, because of the number of shows you and I have done, it seems to me any one of the points we have brought up would be enough for people to go yelling and screaming in protest. But we've not seen it.
No. And it's really tragic. So we talked about the school systems. Do you know of any teachers or teachers' organizations that are fighting against this? Because it's not like you're getting to do what you love to do either as teachers.
Right. Well, as far as national groups, forget it. If you do find any like-minded teachers who are bucking the system, I'd love to talk to them, because they're going to be very few and far between. You see, that was one of the things about Common Core and Teach for America and the teachers unions, was they were purposely going after those independently minded teachers who we knew and loved, who were able to teach a child who couldn't read. They would go through the phonics. They would go through all the things that it took for that child to read. Those type of teachers were purposely run out. Kind of like in COVID, when supposed essential businesses were closed, you just killed small businesses for no reason other than it didn't fit the norm. Well, these teachers who were quality, wonderful teachers were replaced by mindless idiots who were run through a Common Core system that we all have to be in this together, and we all have to sing kumbaya, and we all have to take the government money, and we all have to conform to the system, because there can be no nonconformity. Any nonconformist must be annihilated.
That's a very powerful statement. I mean, when you think about how this is playing out, you're right on the money. It just seems that the whole design of this is no longer about education. It's about social conformity and socially, you know, programming somebody to hate somebody or hate themselves and depend on someone bigger and smarter than them to run their lives. They think.
Well, that's part of the beauty, if you will, of the United Nations and their global citizen movement. Because as a global citizen, you have no country. You have no countrymen or women. You're just this person who exists in this supposedly utopian system where everybody gets along, where no one's poor, no one is starving, everyone has a job, everyone's prosperous. I mean, they have so woven this absolutely unattainable message of prosperity through these sustainable development goals, but that's the sales pitch. The crux of it is, and you just brought it up, it is a social culture change. It has nothing to do with education, because we cannot be controlled and conformed here in the United States if we are allowed to still think we're a free people.
Or any other country. It seems to me that we're the last of that. We were the last holdout. I know from the healthcare side of it, we were the last holdout to, you know, government-run healthcare. Government system of doling out what was considered to be necessary healthcare versus not, how much it was going to cost and who was in the system. And it was obviously the whole UN driven coding system and all that other sort of stuff. We were the last holdouts on this. And it seems like everything that's coming to pass has made us fall down into this system. Nothing is good. So when they start talking about prosperity, you can get your sustainable income of $1,000 if you're lucky a month. And I don't know what that's going to do for you. You can't own a house. You're going to have to rent it. You're going to
You're going to have to hope you can find a place that you can rent that will still leave you enough for food.
That's a really good point. Or you have all social credit scores. And that, you know, this is a system that they would love to have where everything is digital. But so is your behavior, right? That's the whole social credit score situation.
Yeah, you're rewarded and punished. And I want to point out one vital thing before our show ends. They're going to sit here and listen to, America has accepted the UN. And they're going to sit there and go, it's all the Democrats' fault. No, it's the Republicans' fault, too, because they have colluded on the Sustainable Development Goals. And if you think I'm smoking dope, go look at the legislation that rubber stamps every bit of this into existence, and you will see bipartisan, bicameral support on 95% of it.
It's obvious that they're not representatives of the people, either side.
No.
They're representing something else. And so I want, you know, language is such an important part of this agenda. And as we said before, it's the opposite of what it sounds, so sweet and fluffy, but it's not. Just like the laws that are passed have these ridiculous names that do the opposite of what they say they do. Affordable Care Act,
right.
No. So what are some of the, it's not affordable and it's not healthcare. So from the standpoint of buzzwords that people need to, you know, you hear this, your ear should prick up and you should get your on your hind legs. What are some of the, these little euphemisms? I know that we talked about the village raising a child, but what other words, sustainable, I know is bad, equity, diversity, anything else?
Okay. We have the greater global good. We have, let's see here, personalized learning, child-centered education, behavior interventions, positive behavior intervention support, multi-tiered support systems, anything that comes from the Consortium for Academic and Social Emotional Learning, anything from the National Center for Positive Behavior Intervention Services, anything that's coming at you from both an education and a healthcare stance. So be looking at the medical services that are running through your schools, because they will run to your communities as well. Look at these 21st century community learning centers, or as they're now being called, full service community schools. Be looking at those as well. These are the buzzwords that really should get people on their attention and get them up and moving. And this is why I'm saying in 2024, if you don't know some of these buzz phrases, if you don't really know where to look or anything like that, this is where I can help you, and I can come to you and help you out with that. Just email me info@commoncorediva.com. We'll work on the logistics together, and we will arm these people with the things they need to know.
Now, one of the things I'm curious, do parents have any power when they have these in-home visits, and you describe something called a family ambassador. It sounds really innocuous, but it's not. Do you have the ability as a parent to not let them in your house and not cooperate?
It's called the Fourth Amendment. But you have to know your Constitution. Why do you think they don't teach the Constitution? Because you wouldn't know that your Fourth Amendment right would say, you cannot come into my house. And this is one of the things that we learned here in North Carolina as homeschooling families when they changed the law. Was, wait a minute, if you have a government person come to your door and there's no search warrant and there's no probable cause, oh, hell no, you're not coming in my house.
That's good to
know.
And
that's the way you have to think of it. I'm sorry to say that the way I did, but that's the mindset and that's the passion you need to have when it comes to protecting your family.
It sounds that once you open that door and you allow them in, you lose control because they have the narrative, don't they?
They absolutely do. And, think about some of the old comedy sketches we used to see when we had door-to-door salesmen. And there was always that misnomer about if you let them get a foot in the door, well, then they can open the entire door. That has now become a reality for some people. And it's not that there's a salesman there, it's that there's a government person there. Just remember the old thing that was said, you know, hey, I'm from the government and I'm here to help. Run as fast as you can the other way. Run out the back door if you have to.
We're living in a completely different time, you know, in terms of, it's just so simple before. You send your child to school, you do their homework. Sometimes you'll sit and do their homework with them. You are able to talk with their teacher. You described in the last show, people don't even have parent-teacher conferences necessarily. It's by text, which is kind of crazy. So there's no personal interaction. I think this system, honestly, seems to be empowered by people being remote, by them not being communicative, you know, getting in someone's face, making an appointment. Let's see, what's going on with my child's school? Why is he having problems? Show me. Prove it. You know, one of those kind of mentalities. Do people stop they don't bully when you get, you have some resistance. They expect you to just take it. I think we need to stop doing that.
Well, absolutely. And we have to remember that we have an inalienable right to nurture and protect those children. And we also have a civil rights law that can help us when these things happen. And I think we've talked about that before. It's the Civil Rights Act of 1981, Section 1983. And any person who has harmed your family or your property, you can personally sue them. And so let's say, okay, this particular school system has come in and encroached on your family. You don't go in school and sue the whole school board. You go and you sue every single school board member because they violated Section 1983 of the Civil Rights Act of 1981, which guaranteed you, from a government standpoint, the right to be able to run your family and have personal property without fear of any sort of damage. And anytime any government person, I don't care what capacity they're in, infringes on that or damages your rights to your family or your personal property, there's your recourse. But not enough people will know this because they don't know the law. You have to know the law. You have to know the Constitution. You have to exercise the powers that are within those government documents, because that's how we continue to be a free people. Otherwise, they run right over us.
I think that's a great call to action and a place to end the show. I want to thank you so much for joining me, Lynn. I wish you all the best for Christmas and a blessed and healthy, prosperous new year.
Well, thank you, Dr. Lane, and I hope that you have a glorious time as well. And, you know, I'm not sure what we'll do in 2024, but I have a feeling it's going to be tremendous.
Agreed. Once again, how can people read what you write and listen to your podcasts?
CommonCoreDiva.com is my website, and there you can find out all kinds of things. If you wish to get in touch with me about scheduling speaking or just have a question or a comment, info@CommonCoreDiva.com.
Once again, Lynn, thank you so much. You're a blessing. I want to thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And thank you, everybody, for living in the solution.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.